Welcome to Talk Nation Radio, a half-hour discussion of politics as if the people mattered. I'm David Swanson. A contemporary anti-war playwright tells us that drama since ancient Greece has been a medium of catharsis for veterans opposed to war.
Greek theater was created as a way for combat veterans to sit together and both reenact, because they were the actors, and to watch, because they were the audience, the extreme events that you see in the Trojan Women, that you see in the Oresteia, that you see in all the Greek plays, and live through those together and come out with what the Greeks called catharsis.
But theater, this show will suggest, can benefit not only war veterans, but any of us.
People are afraid to feel, because if they do feel, the feelings are large. What art does, and what poetic language in the theater does, it creates a safe space where you can feel.
I am very excited to say that my guest this week is Karen Malpede. She is the author of 16 plays and often the director of those plays. She is the co-founder of Theater 3 Collaborative, which is at theater3collaborative.org. She is the lead editor and wrote the introduction for a wonderful collection of plays titled Acts of War, Iraq and Afghanistan in 7 Plays. And one of those 7 plays is Karen Malpede's play Prophecy. Karen, thank you for coming on Talk Nation Radio.
Thank you, David, for having me. I'm delighted.
I am excited. I don't get to talk to playwrights very often. I have seen one of your plays, which I had previously read and written about and found wonderful just in the reading, but then, of course, was blown away by seeing it produced, and that was the play Prophecy. Could you tell us briefly what that play is about?
I'll try, yes. And first of all, thank you for your support of Prophecy, because there are few people on the left who care about culture that comes from the left, and you are one of them. And you can write so eloquently about my plays and other people's work that I have to thank you for that. Prophecy is a play that's set in 2006, which, if you recall, was during the invasion of Lebanon by the Israeli army, and also was just sort of right after the worst violence of the Iraq War, the so-called insurgency in Iraq. And it was also at this moment we were discovering that a lot of our soldiers were coming home in very bad shape because of what they had seen and also because of what they had done in Iraq. And the suicide rate among Iraqi vets was beginning to climb. And it's going to turn out, of course, that more Iraq vets will kill themselves through suicide than will have died in combat in Iraq. The first time that's ever happened in America.
Is that not true in Afghanistan as well?
It is true in Afghanistan, yeah, I'm quite sure. So both of these disastrous, long, seemingly unending wars are producing not only amazing civilian deaths in the countries that we're occupying, but civilian deaths at home, because these guys and women come home and become civilians, and then they can no longer live and choose through various means to end their lives.
So we have to keep the wars going so that they might not be killing themselves in vain. It's perfect for...
That's the kind of reasoning that's led us into this whole mess. Yeah.
It's perfect for tragedy, and prophecy is misery and grief. Do you think that current audiences want tragedy, or maybe the better question is, do you think they need tragedy?
Need and want may be two different things, but we found that the audience did want Prophecy. It was in our limited run, but that has to do with censorship in the American theater. It doesn't have to do with audiences. In our limited run, the audience was growing. We were savaged in the New York Times, and the audience still grew. So I think there is an audience for theater that speaks the truth, and Prophecy has a lot of funny lines in it, actually. But it is a play that addresses the loss of the young, also because the drama teacher in the play had a young lover in Vietnam who was badly wounded in Vietnam and died from his wounds, and the young man who has returned from Iraq and has always wanted to go to drama school and is using his benefits to study reminds her of Lucas, her lover from Vietnam. So the play encompasses the disastrous American wars from Vietnam to Iraq, and it also weaves in the story of the drama teacher's husband, Alan, had a relationship with a Palestinian woman who gave birth to a child who named Miriam, who comes back midway through the play to confront her father, her Jewish father. So the play is also partly the Abraham Sarah Hagar myth modernized, and woven into it is the history of the American wars. When Noam Chomsky saw the play, he, like you, was incredibly moved by it. And he spoke afterwards, and he said he realized that for most of his life, he has been in opposition to one disastrous war after another. He was, of course, one of the early opposers of Vietnam. He used to speak to four people in basements about that war. He always said there were four people in church basements, and one of them was the church janitor, and one of them was the drunk who wandered in to get warm, and two were people who cared about what he was saying. But he kept that up, and those of us who went through the anti-Vietnam protests found that we kept it up long enough to really turn the nation around and at least get out of that war. It's obviously a much more complicated story, what happened later.
Karen Malpede, we're talking about your play Prophecy, and what I found so rich about it was the way that these various stories were made more powerful by being weaved together. Wars from the past, wars from the present, and as well as ancient stories from the Bible seemed to become stronger as they were mixed together. And there's a similar richness, I think, to your new play, which is being performed now in New York City, called Another Life. I know you can't summarize a play in 2 minutes, but can you tell us what Another Life
actually,
is about?
If I can quote, something very nice happened last weekend, the opening weekend of Another Life, which was Darius Rejali came to speak after the play, as you are going to speak after the play in a week or so. Darius wrote a book called Torture and Democracy. He saw the play, and he said, well, this is just like Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. As Mary Shelley took the horrors of the French Revolution and wove them into a simple story, I'm paraphrasing Darius, he said, Another Life is the story of post 9/11 America compressed into the lives of six characters. And it's really the story of what has happened to the nation since 9/11.
I'd like to play a little clip from the performance of this play, if that's all right. And maybe you should introduce and tell us about the actor as well as what he's saying.
The actor is my partner, co-founder of Theater 3 Collaborative, George Bartenev, who's a very great actor. Stage, screen, and television. People might have seen him on 30 Rock. They would have seen him in Julie and Julia, and they'll see him in the new Sacha Baron Cohen film, The Dictator. He is playing the character of Handel, and in this little clip, which is just a fragment from a long speech that starts the play, we come to realize that Handel is reflecting on his life while the towers are falling down outside his Soho Loft window. And his life is really the iconic American dream life. He's the child of immigrants who came from undisclosed terrible places, running away from undisclosed terrible persecution. They came here, one was a watchmaker, one was a seamstress. They worked very, very hard. In the midst of that very hard, difficult life, the mother of Handel commits suicide. But Handel goes off to the Public University of New York, which used to be free, and was the portal, and to some extent still is, for every immigrant community to higher education. And then he gets a scholarship to graduate school, some fancy school, an Ivy League school. And then he becomes a psychiatrist businessman who goes into running clinics and institutes about how to get better performance out of workers and out of executives. And then, in the course of the play, he found a private contracting firm called Deepwater. But in this speech, he's reflecting on his life, which has been interrupted by the attacks on 9/11, and soon enough he figures out how he can profit off of those attacks.
Okay, let's listen to George Bartenev in Another Life.
Cataclysm, treachery beyond description, despite intuiting no prediction, and yet we grow again. Up from we step and must Lift up, take hold, bootstraps, fold. I see them now before me bent, never once she nor he, from their endless, mindless, thankless tasks, to see their son, look up, the boy, to ask what will become, whatever did become of him.
Very eerie sounding piece of the play there. Tell us what was happening.
Well, as I said, he has Handel reflecting on what's happening outside, and what's happening outside is the attacks on the Twin Towers. What it drives him to do is sort of relive his past life. So he's reflecting on his childhood with immigrant parents, poor, hardworking people, and the way that he felt ignored because they were simply so overwhelmed by, you know, putting food on the table, working endlessly long hours. And I think that life of the parents' hardships and the fact that they never discussed those hardships with their son, but they just worked very hard, creates in Handel a man who will never be ignored again and who really is an American success story. He comes from humble parents and he becomes a billionaire. And at that point, the towers fall. And as I said, his next move will be figuring out how to capitalize off of this new world that we're... The play is called Another Life, and that refers to the life after 9/11, when everything changed. And Handel is one of the, quote, beneficiaries of that life, i.e. one of the wealthy people who became far more wealthy post-9/11 through a series of shrewd business moves, which really had to do with the private contracting and security industry, getting in on the ground floor of that.
And of course, this is a personal story of a character in the play, but it's also the political, international story of what's been happening to our country and the world in the past.
Every character, the six characters in the play, all are very individual, and they have their real people who one can feel for. But their stories also are iconic in the sense that they represent different aspects of the country. We actually have an Iraqi actor in the play. He's a refugee from Iraq. He has political asylum in this country, a young man who was an actor and a barber in Iraq and a television actor in Egypt. He used to beam into Iraq a comedy show, much like The Daily Show, from Cairo into Iraq. His name is Abbas Nuri Aboud. He played the Muslim character who is under attack, under domestic surveillance and attack. So each character in the play has an iconic role.
We talked earlier about whether you could read a small section from scene two,
yeah.
I think it is. Can you set that up and
sure.
share it
this
with
is,
us?
Scene one of the play takes place on the day of September 11th, 2001. Scene two takes place in that sort of amazing period of 3 weeks before the U.S. began to bomb Afghanistan. There was 3 weeks between September 11th and October 7th in which the city, New York, where I live, was in a deep state of mourning, but also a deep, reflective, gentle state. And that was the time when the memorials were being built around the city with photos of the missing, candles with flowers, and people would just walk the city streets and stop in front of the memorials and stand together silently and sometimes speaking a little bit with strangers. Simply, you know, paying respects to the dead, feeling their feelings. It was also the time that we used to gather nightly for peace vigils, and we would chant, "Our grief is not a cause for war." The city of New York did not want war post-9/11. So this is a speech that starts scene two, and Tess is the speaker. She's Handel's wife. She has her own story, which I'll tell you after I read the speech, but she's a photographer. An artist and a photographer. She's married to this very wealthy man, but she disagrees with everything he stands for. And she's out on the street photographing the memorials, and she speaks more or less directly to the audience. Behind her, while this speech is going on, the memorials have been built on stage through slides. So you actually see that the stage is full of photos of the missing. So she says to the audience, "Maybe now we open our hearts to the suffering in the world. If this could happen, then the terrible thing would be undone. Those young men who crashed those airplanes, my first thought, it was really, I felt for their mothers. I felt for their pain of having given birth. Their care come to this. Am I wrong to think so? I watched. I saw. I felt the mother's cries in me. Strange what thoughts come. And I am not the only one. All around me where I stand on the street, people are full of feelings they have never felt. Who knows why they think what they think? Quiet it is on the city streets. People are busy expanding their hearts. Feelings come they dare not say. No noise but the whoosh of each one opening up. The city so still, like being held in a large hand. Each one is a newborn. For the first time, such sweetness. We stand, quiet together, mourning our dead. There is no more terror on the streets of New York.
This was a selection from Another Life, read by the author and director Karen Malpede. This is Talk Nation Radio. I'm David Swanson, speaking with Karen Malpede, whose play Another Life is currently being performed in New York City. And I've read it. I have yet to see it. But the experience of seeing Prophecy was so intense, so moving, that you really have to wonder what incredible good it would do if the whole country could see these plays. I mean, I have to assume that if people watched this...
From your mouth to God's ears, David.
I wish I believed in God. It might help. But I mean, if instead of Hollywood, if instead of things like 24, people were watching plays that spoke to the horror and the harm of torture and war, we might end them. I mean, how frustrating is it to know that...
You know, I had a student come. I teach at John Jay College of Criminal Justice, and that's part of the CUNY City University system. And most of the students there are first-generation college students, and therefore they haven't seen many plays at all, and certainly not many topical and poetic and adventurous plays, if I may say, like Kind I Write. So she came on Saturday night, and she brought three of her friends, and last night I met her in class, and she came up to me afterwards and said, the play, she couldn't quite find the words, but she said, the play was so interesting. And then when I heard this morning about the massacre in Afghanistan, I understood, because in the play you have a character under all those pressures, and there's a character in the play who's against torture, but who tortures because he gets into a situation where actually he's on the phone with the White House and they're telling him to ramp it up, which is what indeed happened. And so he ends up doing exactly the thing he swore he would never do, which is torture, to get the, quote, truth, and of course, which is a lie. But she got it in a way that helped her understand this most recent atrocity of this soldier who had served three tours in Iraq and was on his tour in Afghanistan and went bonkers and killed so many, many innocent people. I think that art is, and drama, is essential to helping people understand the dilemma that we're in as a nation with what we have done. Because if we can't understand what we've done to others and also to ourselves, we will not be able to change course, and we will not be able to really save ourselves. We're kind of at that crisis moment. And of course, that's always been the function of drama. The function of drama has been to sort of try to right the wrongs by allowing the audience to experience what has happened, what's been done in their name, in our name, and experience it in a way where it's beautiful, and because the acting and the design and the language, the beauty of those things mitigate the horror and allow the truth to enter.
Karen Malpede, I think a lot of us have, of course, thought we were in a moment of crisis for many years now, as things continue to go downhill and get even worse. And you're constantly hearing from political activists who are engaged and frustrated, if things would only get even worse, then people would rise up and resist. And yet they don't. And I wonder if the smarter approach is to show people through the experience of art how horrifying, you know, to mitigate it in a way that it can be presented to them, but to present it to them full strength so that they understand how bad things are in this moment and they don't actually have to get worse.
The problem is that people are afraid to feel, because if they do feel, the feelings are large. And that can happen in an intimate relationship. It can happen in a country, you know.
Mm-hmm.
What art does and what poetic language in the theater does is it creates a safe space where you can feel. And you're feeling it with an audience and with live actors. But you're feeling your own feelings. Nobody tells you what to feel. You're being presented a story of, in this case, six characters trying to grapple with the post-9/11 world to the best of their ability. One is a physician, one is an artist, one is an interrogator, one is this businessman Handel, one is a dead guy named Jeff, who died in the towers, who comes back as the kind of conscience of the play, the pre-9/11 understanding. He doesn't understand what the war on terror is. He doesn't get what's going on, and he speaks a sort of purity. And the sixth character I mentioned is the livery cab driver, Abdul, who becomes a prisoner of Handel. It's sort of in house detention under Handel, and who resists his inner resistance is what's so moving. Like the guys in Guantanamo who every night would carve Arabic sayings, legends and stories into their, you know, their cups, their polyurethane cups with their fingernails to make something beautiful. And then every morning the guards would come and smash those cups. And every night they would recarve another cup. This is a story from Guantanamo which moves me so much because it shows how even in the worst, worst, worst conditions, the will to make art, the will to make something beautiful, the will to recite poetry, even to oneself, keeps you alive and keeps you human. And that really is the function of art, to remind us that we're feelingful people. And if we could encourage our own feelingfulness, we would not need things to get worse. We would actually be mobilized to reach out in a compassionate way to our victims, to ourselves, to one another, to our soldiers, and heal some of these terrible things that have been going on.
It's an excellent idea and an excellent word, feelingfulness. I think your book, Acts of War, has seven plays, and the first one is taken word for word from actual nonfiction accounts from torture victims, and it's very powerful. But I have to say the other six are more powerful, I think.
Yeah,
I think
I agree.
That the contribution of the artist, of the playwright, synthesizing and boiling down the most intense emotion, impact is there's something lost, less real in the real, in the nonfiction.
I totally agree with you, and thank you for saying that. Guantanamo is probably the best known of those seven plays, but the other six, I agree, because the artists, and they're all different artists, men and women, English and American, have put so much of themselves into each play and made vibrant characters who bring the truth home. Yeah.
You also have a great introduction to Acts of War that you wrote that actually says something that might surprise some people, even people who oppose war and people who enjoy theater. And that is that you say that the medium of drama arose as a complement to and maybe an antidote to war. Can you explain that?
Absolutely. Drama, as we know it, came into being in the 5th century BC in Athens, which also brought into being democracy. And as you know, Athens was a warrior culture. And despite giving us theater, philosophy, art, and democracy, destroyed itself with ever-expanding imperialist wars. All Greek men, they had universal conscription, so all Greek men were soldiers. And the theater was actually created, we think, and Jonathan Shea, who's a psychiatrist who works with Vietnam vets and now with Iraq war vets, re-presented this theory, which other people have picked up because it's so obviously true, that Greek theater was created as a way for combat veterans to sit together and both reenact, because they were the actors, and to watch, because they were the audience, the extreme events that you see in the Trojan Women, that you see in the Oresteia, that you see in all the Greek plays in Oedipus, and live through those together and come out with what the Greeks called catharsis. Catharsis means clarity of sight. So the drama was the collective gathering place to more or less purge, which is the other meaning of catharsis, get it all out, and by getting it all out, come to a new clarity of sight. That was because the combat vets needed a healing process that would allow them to return to civil society and be able to function in a democracy. And the theater was part of that healing continuum. Theater was the social public healing component of the ancient world. But in my view, the theater has that function again in this moment that we're in. The Greeks were very aware of becoming individuals. And one of the purposes that warfare served was to reinforce that notion that we have different fates, because they were coming from a tribal culture into what we now know as a Western individual culture. And of course, one of the great things about Western culture, and there aren't too many, but one of them is the value in the ideal, the valuing of the individual. But I think we're at the end of that spectrum where we overvalue the individual, and without losing any of our valuing of each individual life, we also have to understand that we are connected to an organic whole, and we have to understand that our life is more precious when we understand our life in relationship to the life of the rest of the planet. We're at the end of a continuum, if you will, and this is the perfect time to reinvent a kind of theater that has the power of the ancient tragedies, with the new understandings that we can sort of pour in that container.
Well, we certainly have a lot of combat veterans today who can use any help toward catharsis available, and the rest of us as well.
Yeah, I think we non-combat veterans need to take the first step to meet them, to meet the women and men coming home bearing these terrible secrets of what they've done often and certainly what they've seen always. You know, you hear all this nonsense about support our troops.
Yes.
Supporting our troops really means being able to feel the terrible things that have happened to the Iraqis, the Afghans, and to our troops.
You have a great foreword to Acts of War by Chris Hedges, one of our best, and yet writes in the foreword, "Wars may have to be fought to ensure survival, but they are always tragic," which seems contradicted in your own introduction and certainly seems rejected by the experiences shown to us in the play.
You know, we have to think much more creatively about what kind of nonviolent interventions can be put in place when it's clear that civilian populations are under siege. And I think it's clear from Libya to Syria that the West and NATO only intervene when it's to their geopolitical interests. This notion of humanitarianism, you know, if you think back, we were supposed to intervene in Afghanistan to save the women of Afghanistan, and in fact, we've done just the opposite. So we need to be much more creative on how to intervene in conflicts, and intervening in a conflict with more conflict is not the answer. I think we can see that.
Very, very well said. We need some playwrights hired by the State Department. We are out of time, I'm sorry to say. Karen Malpede is the author of Prophecy and Another Life and many other excellent plays. Her book, Acts of War, Iraq and Afghanistan in 7 Plays, and the website is Theater 3 Collaborative. Karen Malpede, thank you for coming on Talk Nation Radio.
Thank you so much, David.
This is Talk Nation Radio. I'm David Swanson. Talk Nation Radio is produced in Charlottesville, Virginia, engineered by Christiane Brown in Reno, Nevada, and syndicated by Pacifica Network. Until then.